Will you pray with me? O God, may the words of my mouth and the meditations of all of our hearts be acceptable in your sight. O God, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. At dinner that night in Bethany, near the Mount of Olives, Lazarus stole the show. At any other dinner, any other night, Jesus would have been the one commanding the conversation. Jesus would have been the one to whom every eye turned, to whom everyone was listening to hear his next word, hanging on every word. But at that table, on that night, with Lazarus sitting among them, the man who had been dead and whom Jesus had brought back to life, all anyone could look at was Lazarus. Lazarus, remember, he was not someone revived from death swiftly, mere moments after heart and breath had stopped, not even the same day. Lazarus had been sick. He had wasted away and died. He had been wrapped in grave clothes. He had the funeral psalms sung over him. The funeral mourners had departed. The tomb had been sealed. The mourners gone home. Lazarus had been dead for 4 days. For 4 days before Jesus raised him. Whatever it is that happens to us when we die, it well and truly had happened to Lazarus. Lazarus was dead, and here he sat at dinner with them, alive. Who could talk of anything else? There would be no time that night to talk about logistics for the next day's march into Jerusalem. They would make exactly no time to talk about a parade route or a suitable mount or to line up a venue for where they would go or figure out who was going to be talking to all of the nervous police. All of that would have to get figured out the next day in Bethany, near the Mount of Olives, at table with Jesus and with Lazarus, who had been dead but was alive again. That night, they spoke of how death was not at all what it seemed. They spoke of life and its power, of fate and the freedom that fate brings. They spoke of calling and purpose and resolve. Because of Lazarus at table, Lazarus who had been dead and who was alive again. Now, it was not only the people who loved Jesus who were talking about Lazarus. Lazarus was all that Jesus' enemies were talking about, too. And Jesus did have enemies, many enemies, authorities who wielded power to deal death like a weapon against people. Authorities who had risen to positions of power and influence because they understood how powerful fear could be. They understood that fear and death, that death could cast a shadow across a whole city, a whole nation. How the shadow of a cross might loom large, that they could get their way. They could get their way by holding the power of death and threatening people with it. These authorities, these death trusters, they had already resolved that they were going to have Jesus killed. They had already decided that before. But they hadn't counted on Lazarus. Here was a man who had tasted death, the worst of their weapons, the substance of their fear, the might of their arm. He had tasted death and was now living proof that death was not the greatest power in the world. And every single person who Lazarus talked to, they would see with their own eyes the evidence of a power greater than death. Everyone Lazarus talked to would be a little less afraid of death, a little less awed by its power, a little less able to be controlled by the death-dealing and death-trusting authorities. And so, they had to put Lazarus to death as well. The Gospel of John, chapter 12, verse 10. So, the authorities planned to put Lazarus to death as well, since it was on account of him that so many were deserting and believing in Jesus. And the authorities, these death trusters, exactly what they were afraid would happen, did happen. Jesus and Lazarus and the other followers, they came into Jerusalem to a hero's welcome. The city was electrified. They had no cavalry. Jesus rode no horse. They had no machines of war. Yet not even the gates of hell could have stood against the march of Jesus and his columns of life that day. They had no long train of wealthy courtiers or powerful dignitaries to add an air of pomp and circumstance to their parade. Just a surging crowd of ordinary people waving homemade banners from whatever they could get at hand, palm branches and cloaks, a city full of people in the streets shouting themselves hoarse, "Hosanna, blessed is the one who comes in the name of the Lord, our ancestor David." The city was electric. And the authorities, the death trusters, they said to one another, "Do you see? Do you see? The whole world is going after him." And so they resolved. After that day, after this triumphant, joyous entry, all the more did the plot advance. The plot against the life of Jesus. The plot against the life of Lazarus. Lazarus was dangerous to the authorities, these death trusters, because he could not be cowed by death's power. He was dangerous, since just by being alive, he showed that the power the authorities held, these death trusters, these death wielders, it was nothing more than shadows and smoke and illusion, fear. Lazarus marched alongside one who held power far greater than death. The Lord, mighty in battle, whose arm cannot be resisted, the Lord of hosts, so mighty in battle that the Lord might prove victorious without shedding a drop of blood, whose arm was long enough to need no sword. Now, to truly experience the saving power of Jesus, as Lazarus did, to be delivered from the worst that the world has to offer, this is to be caught up and implicated and pulled along with Jesus. To be saved by the power of this man, it is to publicly proclaim the values of Jesus and to proclaim and to follow after Jesus. That is not always a safe thing to do. Just ask Lazarus. Now, the gospel does not tell us whether the plot against Lazarus was successful, but it does say that he was at risk, that there were people seeking after his life. The followers of Jesus have often found themselves at risk, targeted by the authorities of their day, under threat by the death trusters of their day. Because this is not a quaint tale from the Bible, and the more that you read the Bible, I think the less quaint you'll find it. This is not a quaint tale, the idea that there are those who seek to get their way by wielding the power of death like a weapon to control others. This is the world that we live in. Many people rise to positions of power and influence because they understand how powerful fear is. They understand that death can cast a shadow across a whole city, a whole nation. And if they can hold the power of death like a weapon and threaten people with it, they just might be able to get their way. That there are such authorities, such powers and principalities, such death trusters, this is not a quaint tale. This is the world that we live in. And to be a follower of Jesus, this can make one an enemy of the authorities. Just ask Lazarus. Because there are those among us today, even right at this minute here, there are those among us who are like Lazarus, who have tasted death, who have been called back into life by the power of Jesus Christ. There are those who have been, who have lived. There are those who have lived through hell on earth and who have been called out of those flames, who have passed through those flames back into life, able to tell the tale, to be a follower of Jesus, to be among the church, to be among the faithful. This is to surround yourself with those who follow Jesus. It is to meet people, to hear the stories of people who are living proof that death is not the greatest power in the world. It simply is not. To be a follower of Jesus is to be someone who cannot be cowed into fear by the shadow of death, because we know of a power far greater than death, held, born from, carried in the living arms of Jesus. And so, just as the death trusters of his day plotted against Lazarus, so have believers throughout history found themselves in the crosshairs of those in authority. This has always been a part of what it means to be a Christian. It means to be an enemy of those authorities, those death trusters who would wield death like a weapon, even if one does not choose to make oneself an enemy of them, simply by understanding that death is not the greatest power in the world. Simply from knowing the truth, one is an enemy. This is not a quaint old tale, the idea that unbeknownst, unintended, we find ourselves enemies of the death trusters, of the ones who seek to get their way through fear. On Thursday, March 8th, 15 days ago, we hosted an event at the church here in this sanctuary. It was an outside group who needed large space because they had a large attendance expected. The group is called Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America, and they had hundreds of people gathered, resolved to do something about the gun violence in this country, resolved not to be afraid anymore, resolved to change the laws. And so we agreed. We hosted the event. And just before the event was to close, a few minutes before the final speaker wrapped up, a man walked into the back of the church in the narthex, and he confronted the women who were volunteering for the event, who were signing guests in. He pulled up his jacket and he showed them that he was carrying a gun. And then he left. He came into our church and he was there to frighten people with the power of death. That is what he had come to do. He was there to threaten people with fear held like a weapon. He was there to terrorize people and to try to get his way. He was there to act as a a self-appointed representative of the authorities of our day, the death trusters of our day. That's what he was there to do. This week, the ministers and officers and board chairs of the church gathered to discuss how we ought to respond. And I asked them a question. I asked them, on this issue so heated of guns and gun reform, is this simply too dangerous for the church to take public stands on? If we are invited by this group to host more of their meetings, should we as ministers politely decline? A man came into the church with a gun and threatened people because we were supporting gun reform. That's what happened. Should we take to heart the lesson this man with a gun was trying to teach us and keep our mouths shut in the future? Emily, you're an officer of the church. You were a part of that conversation. What do you say? Should we shut up about gun reform? Deb, Washington, you are the moderator of the church. What do you say? Should we shut up about gun reform? Stephanie, you are one of the senior deacons of the church, tasked with overseeing the spiritual life of this place and ensuring a safe and hospitable place for the worship of God. What do you say? And do you, Old South, do you, the people who are the church, you, beloved, what do you say? To do this, to be the church, to love Jesus and to follow after him, simply to live the values of Jesus, though we seek no quarrel with any, though we wish no bloodshed on any, though we would be people of peace, nevertheless, we have found ourselves enemies. Enemies to those who would trust in death as if it were the greatest power, as if it were the surest way to get what you want in life. What foolishness. What foolishness. Those who do not know of the Lord, strong and mighty, the Lord, mighty in battle, so mighty that God need not ever draw blood to prove victorious, whose arm is long enough that God never need wield a sword. This is the one whom we follow. This is the one in whom we must trust. And that as we embark on this week, as we embark into this holiest of weeks, when we understand and tell the story of the clash between God and the power of death, we must remember the one who leads the way, who rides on ahead of us.